Welcome to Preservation State with your hosts, Philip and Christopher. This is episode number 2, August 20th, 2013. Yes, yes. So, do you want to do a show?
Yeah, let's do it. I hit the red button. Somehow you knew that I hit it.
Oh, I hit the red button before I answered.
Oh, well, so you got every little bit of everything. So now you can...
Well, my side anyway.
All right. Nice. So maybe you didn't actually. And I tweaked my settings and now I have them perfect because now I can see me on one side, you know, with the little BU meter and then you on the other.
Okay. You still think that's the best way to go, huh? I was thinking that if we both record our own sides, or you're recording both and then you dump the side of me and then replace it with my recording?
Right.
Gotcha.
Because at the end of the day, well, I mean, we were so lucky. Like, we had no dropouts at all last time. And so it was just like, woo, save that one. The only problem is I had to, when I add the compressor on both of us, then it brought my back, like the background on me up a little bit. And I didn't really like that. So anyway.
Right.
So here we are at episode 2. And it's so hard to believe. I'm mind-boggled.
Mind-boggled,
yes.
Huh? Two's a big one.
That's right.
And we decided to stick with it, at least for another week.
Exactly. Which I'm super excited about. I mean, getting back into the groove. Oh, as you crack it open.
You know, crack. Got to have something to drink. Got to have a beverage. It's too warm in here.
Yeah, that's what I've got. I'm double fisting. I've got my instant coffee in one hand and ice water in the other.
Okay, hold on a second.
All right,
I'm not Marco.
But,
did I hear you say the words instant coffee?
I did say instant coffee, and I'll tell you something. Now I have I am not quote unquote fickle with the coffee in certain regards. Now, because my regimen and my only really machine is a Keurig, so yep. I'll go K cups. Now, the other end of the spectrum is I don't have Marco money. So I can't have...
Who does?
Marco. So I have to go on the budgetary scheme of I can have neat things and good things like K-cups every now and again when we're a little flush. But when I am on the move in the morning, I don't have time to, you know, to play around with measuring stuff out. I'd take, you know, a scoop, two scoops of instant, little Clasco Suave, and blast it, and I get instant hot water with the Keurig, and I'm done, and I'm out the gate. And the stuff will levitate you like like nobody's missed. You put three scoops in there, and you have the strength of two men.
Giddy up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, it is, I mean, no joke, three scoops, and I mean, you're going to taste every bit of it. But I want to taste it. I don't want dirty water. I mean, you know, it's like unsweetened tea. You know, it's just dirty dishwater.
I got you.
Can't have it. We do have a little Syracuse follow up. What was amazing was we were discussing So Sorry Yahoo, and then the whole thing popped up that they're having. This almost seems like one of those, like we really don't know what we want to be. So we're going to institute 30 days of change and change the logo 30 times. And maybe one of those will stick.
Well, they say that they have a logo that they're going to unveil at the end of the 30 days. And this is supposed to get us excited. That's what their website says, you know. But I don't know. My theory is that they're throwing a whole bunch of horrendously bad things at us for a month in hopes that their official logo unveiling will not suck as bad and people will be excited.
Maybe it'll be like a gold iPhone.
Gold. I heard those rumors.
Yeah. I just can't, that doesn't appeal to me and it can't be real.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that it's real, but hey, there is, you know, the one sort of thing that makes it semi-plausible is that the color gold is very important in China. It's you know, isn't it good luck and et cetera, et cetera?
Really? Now you're speaking Danish to me.
Hey, maybe I'm lying. I don't know.
Well, we're gonna have to do a little Wikipedia lookup on that, there, Jorge. There's got, because for some reason, like you say that, and it somehow kind of like hits me in the head a little bit, kind of like that might be true. And now, if let's just imagine that phone was the cheaper of the iPhones.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's the price that seems to be kind of that whole the full price that's been kind of wavering in the Asia market. That it's not as low as some of the others, and that's why it has been gaining traction. That would be crazy, but I just don't see Apple doing something different in another country and not doing it for us.
Right.
Yellow,
corresponding with Earth, is considered the most beautiful and prestigious color. The Chinese saying, yellow generates yin and yang, implies that yellow is the center of everything. So it's more yellow, but it does say here, yellow is sometimes paired with red in place of gold. So I don't know if it's more yellow or gold, but I think that, you know, the idea being that the, you know, yellow gold color is significant culturally.
Yeah.
But yeah. I kind of agree with you. I don't see it happening. It seems odd to me.
Because I'm trying to think of even the iPods, if there's a yellow iPod or goldish. I think there is.
I to be honest with you, it's been a long time since I looked at iPods.
Yeah. Well,
there is a yellow one, but it's sort of, I would classify it as more of a yellowish green than a yellow myself, but I guess that's open to interpretation.
Interesting.
Anyway. Yes.
Well, if
soon we'll find out, you know, all this is supposed to happen in about 20 days.
That's right. And so that, and of course, you know, we talked about this briefly on Whisper last night. I do have a kind of a conspiracy vein in me. And who was it that they just pulled a guy from Nike who worked on the the Nike Fitbit thing majig, and they pulled him in. I posted it and I can't remember the guy's name. However, and I told you, because I think that I can remember even Steve Jobs saying this, if I'm not mistaken, but the original testing of how glass worked was put on us, and we didn't even really realize it because it was on the MacBook Pros when they instituted the touch sensor, and that made that out of glass. So they were already kind of in the works of prototyping and testing things without us even knowing.
Oh, you're talking about the trackpad.
Correct.
Gotcha. Sure.
Correct. Because they had changed it to glass. And so and they said, well, we figured that out. We knew how to do that. So I was like, okay. So that gave me some insight into thinking, everybody gets real hung up on what something is rather than looking at, if you look in it backward on them a little bit and then look at what came before, sometimes you can, I think you can gather some steam and maybe a little bit of breadcrumb and start piecing Lucy together. And so I was thinking, now this whole thing came out with the guy from Nike getting now as an employee of Apple. So we're thinking about, I don't buy into the iWatch. I think it's a wrist device. And I think, and I posed it to you, I said, I wonder if maybe rather than, you know, you think about how the Xbox works with, you know, the Move, or the Sony works the Move, and then the Xbox has the camera. What if potentially maybe an Apple TV had some sort of sensor on it that would see what was on your wrist? And I can't put it all together yet, but it just seems like there's something to this device working with other things, because everybody sees that. Everybody, I don't think anybody disputes that it can't work by itself. I mean, you're not going to do an email from it.
Well, it's not going to have an internet connection itself. You know, no way. You wouldn't be able to fit a cell modem and the required battery, et cetera, into a watch size device at this point. It's not going to happen.
I mean, could you do Wi-Fi?
Maybe, but once again, you're excuse me, you could probably fit the chipset in a watch size device, and probably the antennas, I suppose. But your problem once again is power.
Yeah, because you're not going to want to plug that in every night.
Well, you're going to have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I think with you know, iPhones that pretty much have to be plugged in every night, and, you know, iDevices that pretty much have to be plugged in every night if you use them as much as I do.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe if they go with something that doesn't have, you know, has very minimal connectivity in it, maybe just Bluetooth 4.0. So, which is the low energy Bluetooth spec, and, you know, then it just connects to your iPhone and uses your iPhone for all the goodness. I think that's probably the only way it could really be done at this point.
I just think that there's something to it knowing. There's something to it, and it's going to be something that I think is going to be like, this is phase one of whatever's coming. But I can't see it for, I don't know. I'm just, there's something in the ether about it. And I'm willing to double down saying, look, that there's something coming in that regard.
Right.
Not exactly. It's not anything what we're thinking of, but it's phase one. And if you take 2 years from now, it's going to make perfect sense. And I said it here first.
You heard it, folks.
Damn right.
Well, you know, I agree with you on one point. Something's coming. There's no denying that. but I just don't see motion control a la Xbox and the Sony. I just don't see it. I just don't see people sitting on the couch waving their Apple adorned wrist around in order to control their Apple TV. I personally think that Apple has invested way too much time and money in Siri for it not to go the way of voice.
Well, that's true. And supposedly that's getting a lot better. And but, you know, Eddie Q had said that it's going to be able to do more.
Right. Well, you know, the other problem with the things like Siri is, you know, it's going to improve in increments along the way. But, you know, until artificial intelligence really reaches a new milestone, that's when we're going to see real progress.
I believe it.
You just can't, you know how dealing with Siri is. It's good and it's useful, but it's certainly not natural, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I kind of have a trouble talking to Siri. You know, I'll I do reminders and, and calendar events, but that's about it.
Yeah. I'll ask her questions, you know, when I'm out and about to find something, perhaps. Works pretty well.
I've never really had too much of a problem. I mean, I have had, especially if I'm in and out of Wi-Fi, you know, and that's really more, and I know that, like, it's like, well, I was trying to get to Wi-Fi, now I couldn't, so it kind of lags there.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Siri over, over cellular is pretty pokey at times, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had gotten the email on this, but we did get a sponsorship request.
Oh, from who?
It was from Yummy Bears Multivitamin and Minerals.
You're making this up.
Well, I mean, really, am I? I mean, if you didn't get the email, then maybe, you know, maybe it was spam, or maybe, oh, you know what? I did click on it. Oh, doggone it.
Now they own you.
Man. Google.
Yeah. I didn't see that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to make, sure if you had seen it or not. Well, they have your contact information, because they just sweeped up, my contact. So you'll
awesome.
Yeah. So that sucks.
Yes.
Well, so let's get down to brass tacks, because I think I've been pretty, pumped up about this show, just because, for those who don't know, you know, you're the spearhead, the brainiac, the eyeball, from Curious Satellite, and you've got two apps in the App Store right now. Hueless, which is, you know, the best black and white, you know, photography app in existence.
Really? Damn right.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we know that, but, you know, people might not, so we need to make sure. And then, you know, it's really brother, really twin brother, except Humor, it shoots color. And what was it, yesterday? That was Monday the 19th. You put out a pretty massive update.
I think so. Pretty cool addition. Yeah. Yeah. Split focus and exposure.
And you do it kind of a little bit differently than I've seen it done, which is, you know, it's just a two-finger tap, splits it out, but you've got the animation in it is very, very smooth, where, you know, you have the focus, and you actually can lock focus and lock exposure just by holding. But the animation is just choice.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, we worked hard on that.
So this brings me around to, you know, we've talked about, you know, just on the side of kind of the impediments or an app development. And I'm thinking, you know, when is done? You know, when do you say to yourself, okay, you know, we've done, how old is Hueless now?
Hueless is about a year and a half old.
Okay. So is there a point at which you say, okay, Hueless is, we're done with this. And done being, there's not much more to go. When do you know that? And, you know, cause, you know, when you know, I've seen apps, they, you know, they start tacking on and tacking on, and eventually the app kind of loses what it, and, you know, it's that niche or that interesting fact about it that, you know, kind of goes off into the distance. And it's kind of like, well, it used to be good. Now I use this.
Right. Right. Yeah. That, you know, that's a, that's a hard question. I think that really one of the keys, to answering that question is that you have to have, as a developer, a clear idea of exactly what it is you want to create beforehand.
So what inspired you for Hewless?
Well, for Hewless, it was really, you know, the iPhone came out and then they launched the App Store and, you know, apps started showing up like mad, et cetera. And, you know, photography immediately became a really big deal for the iPhone. But there really wasn't anything that did, you know, anything like what we wanted to do. I wanted to shoot, you know, there were plenty of apps that would allow you to post-process and create a black and white photo or what have you, apply color filters or those sorts of things. But there was nothing at the time that would allow you to do it in real time as you were shooting, you know, really give you that black and white shooting experience. And partially that was because at the time when I came up with the idea, it wasn't possible.
It had to be all done in post. It could not, you couldn't hit the sensor.
iOS 4 and previous versions of iOS did not have the APIs that would allow us to tap into the image sensor and do the things we're doing. That was only possible with the release of iOS 5. So it was an interesting thing. I came up with the idea and my development partner Michael and I started discussing it, et cetera. And, you know, we sort of quickly realized that it wasn't even possible. And then iOS 5 came out and we went, aha.
Now it's go time.
Now we can do this. Yeah.
Well, and I'm thinking, you know, so insofar as hitting the sensor, you and I have talked about this, that really actually is a fairly complex solution. It's also extremely taxing on
memory intensive. Yes.
Right. And, you know, and I had told you that ViscoCam, VSCO, that they had actually released an update because apparently it was overheating the phones.
Yep. Yep.
So I thought to myself, well, no, you know that, because I believe that one does, I think it does real time, but don't quote me on that.
It does do some real time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the ones that I've seen that do real time, it always seems like it's almost as if they're adding a few layers on top of what you're seeing. It doesn't seem like there's an actual change of the image. It's like, it's like a multiplied layer.
Right. That's actually how a lot of apps on the App Store do photographic effects, is they have, you know, like you're saying, some sort of layer, which is, you know, a vignette and some grunge and some whatever, you know, in it. And they, like you say, they mix that layer with the live image to give you, their end result. And we don't do that. We everything we do is done, you know, in real time, with big math.
That math stuff will get you every time.
That's, you know, yeah, I do not understand the math and, thankfully don't need to.
Right. Right. This brought the whole notion, and I'm going to kind of derail for a minute.
Sure.
But that whole notion that, you know, you can have anything you want running on your phone and that everything should be hunky dory and your phone will never slow down because all the apps are told, you know, to turn off after X amount of time. Now, we'll circle back to episode 1. And the first thing I wrote, what is there a bug? Right. And it happened to be with 2 different apps running simultaneous. Or one was supposedly backgrounded and the other was live.
Right.
And we've heard it time and time again. Oh, you don't need to, you know, kill the stuff in your background. But that's not true.
Well, in theory, it's true. In reality, life doesn't really quite turn out that way.
So the biggest, it's the way the app is written?
Well, you know, I being sort of the least technical side of the development team at Curious Satellite, you know, I'm the designer, so I can't speak too technically about it. But, you know, there are systems built into iOS where apps are, you know, supposed to give up their memory gracefully for other apps, you know, et cetera. And I think for the most part, generally, you know, they do. But, you know, a computer like the iPhone or the iPad or what have you is just like any other computer, and it's not perfect. And sometimes people's apps have memory leaks or what have you, you know, and those can translate to issues when you're running apps. It can happen. I know that, for instance, I think John Syracuse, if I may invoke his name,
would argue
against me, totally saying that, no, there's, I think I've heard him say before, no, there's nothing to that. But in the 2 years of, or over 2 years now of development that we've been doing, it's very clear that if you start running into some interesting issues that look like memory issues, if you reboot your phone and try again, everything's okay.
And you've said that to me, and it goes back to simple, you know, Mac OS X type things. When I get a phone call from a buddy saying something's not working, when's the last time you rebooted?
Yep.
And,
reboot.
And for whatever reason we have in our heads, and I think that the whole, we're still, even though we all have these smartphones, we're not seeing them for what they are. We still see them as razors and, you know, flip phones that we never had to turn off and turn on.
Right. Where in fact that your iPhone in your pocket is, I don't know how many times more, but way more powerful than the, you know, Mac 2 I used to have. You know, there's just,
right.
It's a highly powerful computer in your pocket.
And so every once in a while, you got to flush that RAM.
It helps.
Yep.
It does.
It's a, you know, simple fact of life. Simple fact.
Yep. I don't run into memory issues with our apps very often, but it can happen. And one of the reasons it can happen is because we use a lot of memory. Taking that image off of the image sensor and then applying filters to it in real time, et cetera, requires a lot of processor power and a lot of RAM to do. Probably more than most other types of apps on the App Store.
Well, and then, but you also have an interesting feature, which I don't think I've seen from any other app, which is, you know, you can go to the high quality JPEG, but you also have, you can pull the 25 meg image as a TIFF.
Correct.
Which is, you know, that's a monster file. And
that's the image coming off the sensor, us applying our filters to it, if you have any filters turned on, and then just saving that direct uncompressed image as a TIFF. So in our TIFFs, there is no compression whatsoever on the image. It's the raw image.
And so that sensor is getting 30 frames a second on it, about somewhere in that range,
depending on the device. But yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's getting pounded every second with image. So you can start to equate the math. That starts to get really huge.
Well, but the live preview itself is actually not that big. Video, as opposed to a still image off the sensor, is very different. You know, the live preview is basically a video stream, you know.
Okay, so it's kind of like it lives, it dies, all on the same timeline. As you see it, it's already dead.
Correct. We're not taking our still image from the live preview. We're taking, when you actually snap the shutter, we're taking a fresh full frame off the sensor.
Well, it's just amazing to me, because that feature alone was just kind of a linchpin. When you put that one out, I was kind of shocked. And of course, then I was even more shocked, because it was like more of these apps, especially photography, you know, we all want our pictures, you know, we want the best quality we can get. But most of the time, especially post-production apps, you know, apps that are doing stuff in the background and that you're doing some sort of filtration after the fact, you're not necessarily getting the image that you shot. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've put something through, like, you know, a filtered type app, and then I realized that what I've actually done is reduced my image size significantly to where I really don't have what I originally had. I mean, I've actually kind of killed it.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Well, that's an issue. And I see that as well, happen a lot, with post-processing apps where they're not giving you the full res image as output. And I, you know, not to sound, I don't know, not to sound, snippy, mm-hmm. but to me, that's an indication of somebody who doesn't know what they're doing. There's no reason that pretty much anything you're doing to an image on an iPhone at this point, there's no excuse for not giving people the full res.
Well, and the thing is, there is an element of good enough. I understand that, but with photography, you're only getting that one chance, you know, to make that picture. And so, like, you know, it would be like, you know, I can remember how cool Instagram was because I had an iPhone 3, and, you know, it had a garbage camera. It was great, you know, for what it was, but it really wasn't that good. But, you know, Instagram kind of made it, you know, a janky camera, a good camera.
Yep. Squish those images down small, and yeah, they look pretty good that way. Sure.
But, you know, now we're at a point where, you know, speaking of which, I got to bring this up. Do you have any thoughts on this 41 or 42 megapixel camera that Lumia, the...
Yeah. I you know, my real thought about that device is it just sort of makes me chuckle. That the idea that 41 megapixel sensor, a very small, tiny 41 megapixel sensor with tiny lens elements, tiny glass.
Correct.
The idea that a 41 megapixel phone camera is going to make somebody a better photographer is just humorous.
Well, you know, in the video world, it's always about the glass. But the secondary portion of it is how big is your sensor?
You know, sure, but this, remember that in the case of this 41 megapixel sensor, it's not about size. They've packed 41 megapixels into a tiny sensor.
And it just seems like there seems to be like this, like a weird, it's a weird sales point. And I think it's to mesmerize you with 42. What is it? Is it 42 or 41?
I think it's 41.
Okay.
41.
But I think that's what it is. They're mesmerizing you with the 41. But I have to wonder, and the way they've demoed it out, especially in the ads, is you can zoom in on an area and make a better picture or compose it a little bit better. And that might be, but there's something fishy about it. Like, you know, and I think you hit it right on the head, is that sensor can't be that big. It can't be any bigger than anybody else's.
Well, let's see. I'm looking here and I'm looking for the size here. Of course, they're not going to tell me the size. They're just telling me it's a 41 megapixel. But it's way smaller than a 4/3 camera sensor, you know, way smaller, maybe a quarter of the size, you know, kind of thing. So it's bigger than the sensor that's in the iPhone, but it's not as big as the sensor in your pocket camera, you know.
Now, I think the selling point, if I was looking at something in the vein of new in the way of sensors, would be to have a phone that had the ability to shoot in a raw format and create that digital negative. Now, that's a monster file. But if they could harness a way that you could, you know, you could be getting the information, maybe, you know, kind of like an HDR, except, you know, you could have it as bit data rather than, image data. I think mm-hmm. that would be interesting, because you could take that file and then really, you know, like you work in RAWs, you know, you could end up really doing something visually interesting.
Oh yeah. RAW is great. You know, there's so much flexibility on the backside with RAW. It's something that the iPhone simply isn't capable of at this point.
I really thought that the iPhone, and I'm still wondering if we're ever going to see much like the, we talked about it one time before, the light field focus.
Litro. Yeah.
Yeah, the Litro.
Litro camera, yeah.
Yes. And that thing, possible. I haven't heard anything about that in some time. I think it's dead.
Well, I don't know that it's dead. I just don't know that it has real mass market appeal. The idea of being able to refocus an image, you know, after the fact is interesting, sure. But I think in the grand scheme of photography, it's more of a cute feature, a cute trick than really a serious feature, I guess.
Well, and I could see that, because, you know, you have so many videographers now that are out there, and, you know, the DSLRs have gotten a lot better. And of course, comes along with the DSLR glass. And so you have essentially what you would get from a $50,000 to a $75,000 camera now as in the affordable range of, you know, you could spend $8,000 and have prime lenses on a video camera. Of course, now you see, especially in the documentaries and the lower budget productions, it's become depth of field city, which depth of field is great, but you don't have to do it all the time in every shot.
Right.
And I mean, I do like to, you know, it's a great way to pop out the subject. But at the same time, it's like, wait a minute, you know, it doesn't have to be on every single stinking picture.
Right. Right. I agree. Depth of field is one of those things. It's wonderful, but you have to, you know, have control, you know, and use it when it makes sense and don't use it when it doesn't make sense.
Well, and I think, and probably a lot of that is experience, and it's experience and it's taste. And there's a lot of different things in there that all make up kind of, you know, where you have, well, this is why you hire a DP, because they make decisions that, you know, are going to best suit the director and whatnot. But, you know, it's the same way we all got caught up with doing, you know, lens effects and lighting effects and these big, I was building them in Motion 5, you know, where you had these big lens flares or light flares, you know, and really making your image, well, you're really screwing your image up, obviously. Because for some reason, there's this fact that digital has a tendency to make everything razor sharp and clean, and we loved that when it first came out. And now we want to go backward and make it look like film, because we actually do like film, but we don't want the film cost, which is, you know, very interesting. You know, in fact, you know, I had made my quasi hueless plugin called Colorless, and it was a way to do, because, you know, I don't have a black and white, you know, video camera. I've got to, you know, do, I have to, you know, kind of post you know, produce it a little bit to get it to do that. And obviously you don't see that very often, but it's like, you know, with, especially with black and white, there's this richness that you don't always, you don't get to see when you've just got, you know, Technicolor out the wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird time that we're in, because I've seen so many, you know, productions now that have gotten and even commercials. Commercials are the best representation. It is, everybody's looking for lens flares. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to me. And it has everything to do with those, the trying to get those lenses to, you know, do, you know, what, you know, those huge video camera or huge film cameras did, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
I don't know. If they can invent light field or the light field focus in video, that's going to be off the chain. Because
yeah, now that you guys would like, I guess.
It would be, well, for example, let's just say you didn't have it focused correctly. And if you could, you know, bring it up in post and say, okay, this is what I wanted to focus on, and it made that adjustment, oof. I mean, that would be insane.
So you wouldn't have to be nearly as skilled at shooting.
But see, that's where we're heading anyway.
I disagree.
You think so? Shoot it.
It's the same as all these other things that you and I have talked about offline. Things like blogging and, you know, blogging. Everybody's going to be a writer. No.
That's true.
I don't agree. You know, I feel the same way. Just because you give somebody a piece of technology that can allow them to correct their mistake after the fact, it's not, to me, that doesn't make better photographers.
It just, well, I could see that, because what really ends up doing is just making a lot of files mm-hmm. and just etching up a bunch of data.
I don't care what I focus on, because I'll just change it later.
Yeah, that's, you know, and that's kind of the editor's nightmare is,
right.
You know, when you're sitting on set or you're at a production, we'll just fix that in post. Right. That's because no one realizes is that's a huge burden. And especially, well, for example, sound, you know, that's a big one. You know, it's like, oh, we'll loop that. We'll fix that in post. Well, if you did it right the first time, it'd be set up.
Right. And I still, and from a creative standpoint, it just, it rubs me a little bit the wrong way. When I take a photograph and I am thinking about how I want it to come out, depth of field and where my point of focus is and all of those things are part of the composition of the photograph. It's not something I'm going to decide after the fact for me personally.
Well, no. And see, you know, you bring up a great point is because now, especially with humor, I find that, and especially with being able to focus in on a specific point and then, you know, potentially even blow out exposure by, you know, adjusting,
mm-hmm.
I can do, and well, then tack in the ability to start to add some of my coloring right there is, you know, I can really get a shot together. You know, it's not necessarily point click and get nasty. You can do that, but if you're let's just say out on the beach or out in the mountains or, you know, wherever, and you're trying to make a shot, you know, like you've actually added the tools in that, you know, you normally would, you know, be doing a focus ring on, but you can't do, you know, or you'd be putting gels in front of your lens.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that all right in there. So I can backtrace off you a little bit. I think it comes back to, we've talked about this offline, which is, you know, the big smoke and mirrors on Final Cut 10. You know, that everybody was real jacked off and mad that, you know, the way it was released and this, that, and the other. It's not like it's iMovie Pro, blah, 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 blah. Now, 2 years out of the gate, we're starting to see more. I had actually linked to two articles recently of editors that maybe, you know, had switched over to Premiere Pro or they, God forbid, Avid, and they've now said, oh, you know what? We were wrong. And it actually is crazy fast and it's easy to use, but that's not to say that it's simple. That's not to say that anybody can do it. It just levels the playing field enough to where those that can do it will do it that much better. And those that don't really know how to do it can at least get a starting point and get better. Now, what they make from it is it can either be, you know, some YouTube cat video or, you know, the next, you know, Taxi Driver.
Sure. And that, and, you know, and that part of it has absolutely nothing to do with the technology. To me.
I'll tell you, no, you're right. I mean, it doesn't matter. Except the only problem is you couldn't do it as well 10 years ago.
Sure, but
your barrier
there were
to entry,
plenty of there were plenty of professionals that were still doing it.
That's right,
10 years ago.
And I think that's what scares them, or at least in my post-production field, that's what scares people, is the barrier to entry is a lot easier. And sure. So now it feels like, oh, I'm not going to have a job, or they'll get somebody else to do it, or, you know, they'll be the overall price is going to, and I think that's the case. But again, you know, you are who you are on your reputation. You know, what is it that you do and do you do it well? So,
right.
You know, eventually those people, you know, filter off and the cream will rise to the top yet again.
Hopefully.
It has to, right? I hope so. You know, again, Phil Hodgetts, you know, he's real big on talking about the idea of what's good enough. And there is an element of that. I mean, we look at our cable TV and we accept, you know, macro blocks in the video image. And it's disgusting looking. But most people don't see that.
Right.
You know, one of those things.
Yeah, I just, you know, my concern is you know, photography in general, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see where photography as an industry heads in the next 10 years, because the, you know, the advent of everyone's a photographer has decimated the stock image industry and to a certain extent, the, you know, the pro photographer industry. It's been really messed up by this change in the barrier of entry.
Yeah. See, that it makes me wonder now, because you and I both, you know, listen to podcasts like mad. And I think about, some of these stock photography shops, they have been running really heavy, one in particular. And I have to wonder, you know, are they getting hurt or are they just, well, I don't know. You know, I'm not in business. So is it one of the things where you're pushing advertisement because it's not a last-ditch effort, but you're really trying to make a big splash?
Stock photography to me is a really odd sector. I worked in advertising at some big agencies back, you know, in the day, around Boston, and, you know, and dealt and worked at other advertising agencies too. I worked at one in San Francisco, and every serious advertising agency I've ever worked at, stock photography is a joke.
Like what we're, we shoot it ourselves. We're not going to go out and buy something off offline.
Well, oftentimes they have no choice but to buy stock photography given budget constraints or client constraints or what have you, you know. But it was always very clear that, oh, we're going to get stock photography for this job. Okay, well, that's going to mean that it's a certain level of crap, you know.
Gotcha. Well, you know, and it's interesting you say that because, you know, there's a firm I use, Pond5. Now I say I use them. I don't buy from them, but I submit like some of my B-roll and things of that nature. Or like, you know, I live close enough to the ocean that and waterways that I figure, okay, well, you know, I'll squeeze off a few frames. And like, so I'll submit my video up there. Now, it's amazing to me that, you know, I get $50 a month off of that stuff. Now, and I, you know, I sell it for, you know, whatever, you know, was it like $10 a clip, you know, and some of these clips, you know, it's not like they're long or anything, but it's amazing that people are buying them.
Just what they need, you know? Yeah.
And, you know, but I, even early on when I was at UNCW, I talked to a buddy of mine and I said, it would be so cool in my mind to create something. And it was actually, you know, like a stock footage, you know, house, like where you could get, you know, if you needed video, you could pull it. Because sometimes I think in my mind, if you can rely on good shooters, or if you don't have a good shooter and you need a specific image, the only thing that ever bothers me about that is, so now, Company A uses this piece or this image or this piece of video, and then Company B does the same thing, but it's, you know, completely, you know, two entities, and it just makes both of them look cheap.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I used to, when I was back in advertising again, you know, we used to run across, you'd be looking on the web or whatever, and you'd run across a site and you'd say, oh, I know that stock image. Oh, I know that stock image, you know. It's yeah.
It's like clip art. It becomes clip art.
It is. It is. Yeah.
I think you're right. There is just it's a weird business to be in. But at the same time, now you have a bunch of shooters out there. Now, if they're any good or not, that we can't even put that into context. But you know, most of these sites, I think, kind of look over what's coming through the pipeline, but they're getting a huge amount of data coming into them. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's like using Google Image, you know, what can't you find on Google Image? And that's because we were all gamed into the fact that like they had that one game where you would, actually add the metadata for them. Like they put the image up and then you were competing against another person online to how many words could you describe that particular image. And I don't know if they still have it running, but it's...
Never heard of that. Interesting.
Yeah. So basically we all got kind of gamed into it.
gamed into creating content for Google. Sure.
You know, right.
Makes sense.
We all filled in the metadata because you got points. And it was just it wasn't like who's the best or anything like that, but it was like a game of like who can come up with more descriptive words.
Right.
Descriptions. that's one thing. If I could come up with an app, especially for metadata, because that's become the biggest thing with video right now. Yeah, and Final Cut does a really good job of it. But to be able to add metadata while I'm shooting would be awesome. Like, and have it time-coded up. That would be interesting.
And when you're shooting with your iPhone?
I didn't even think about that. I was thinking about my EX3. But if you could do, I don't, let's see. I again, that might be kind of niche, but if you could, while you're shooting the video, be able to tap on something and just mark it in some way. But I don't know. The phone with video is an interesting prospect, but the form factor is such that it makes it very difficult to get a controlled image shooting video. I mean, you've got to have a glyph or some other device to keep that thing locked down.
Sure. Yep.
Because the stabilization, especially the stabilization, gets a little funky, and then when you throw it through an editor and you try to stabilize that footage, you can get some really wacky results that just are not good. And there's also some apps out there, that try to overcome with the use of just more and more megapixels, and that's not always the greatest of compromises. It just because it gets a little hairy, especially space. That's the big thing.
How do you mean?
Well, if you start shooting, let's say 35 megs per second, and most of these apps are going down to an MPEG 4 format. I mean, I think that's the only thing that they can go down to. I mean, I don't believe there are any that are shooting anything of a RAW-like nature, but there are some that you get into. Well, it's like hitting the sensor, but hitting it, at 24 frames per second or 30 frames per second, except so you're getting a massive file size, and that's, on a phone, that's not a great thing, especially when most of us, like, the weirdest thing happened to me, Dropbox is now a gig inside my phone. I don't have anything favorited, but it's got a gig that it's using up on my phone.
Hmm.
There used to be a way to clear the cache, and they don't have that anymore.
Yeah, that's a lot of space.
It is. And it's every once in a while when it does that, like, I'll just delete the app and then reinstall.
Right.
And I think it has something to do with putting your photos up in Dropbox. It's got to have something to do with that. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just a weird tangent. It's just one of those apps that I love, but at the same time, it's just doing some oddball things.
Never good.
No, I don't like it.
No.
Well, we've gone for 104.
It looks like it, huh?
Yeah.
You didn't start recording then, though, so it's a little shorter than that.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else do we want to cover?
I don't know. What do we got? I'm looking through my Zeit and whatnot.
Your Zeit?
Man, I love that app.
I don't know Zeit. What is Zeit?
Z-I-T-E. Check it out. The reason I like it is, like, I have Feedly. After the whole RSS debacle of Google Reader, I started adding feeds in to Feedly. And that was all great and all. But you know what? Sometimes I kind of, you can only handle, you have the same subscription. So it's kind of always becomes the same voices. It's always the same type of, the Daring Fireballs, the da-da-da-da, and the Life Hacker. And so you end up getting, like, a lot of the same stuff, or it's all the same voice. And yep. What Zeit does is it looks at more interests than it does subscriptions. So it's going to go and find things about what you're interested in.
Okay.
So you can end up getting through, instead of seeing a bunch of articles all hovering about the same thing, because most of the time I think we're going to see that because we're all going to subscribe to the things that, you know, that interest us. So they're obviously going to, there's going to be some overlap. And not to say that there's not overlap in the site, but it just gives me some different things that different from different places that I wouldn't normally go to.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And that's, and that, and I think that's why I like it. And the interface is, you know, really just nice. It's, you know, simple enough and, you know, it's got big splashy images and I can just kind of run through it.
Hmm. So similar to, what you call it, Flipboard, but, more suggestion oriented.
Yes. But gotcha. See, now I, in fact, now that I'm thinking about it, doggone watch, turn off. All right. You know, I really liked Flipboard. I think Flipboard is very, very similar to Zite. Because I think in Flipboard, can't you say, I'd like, you know, stories about this?
I think so. To be honest with you, I don't know. I've never signed up for a Flipboard account. I've just used it as an RSS reader for image-heavy streams, basically.
Gotcha.
You know.
I had it for a while, and it became one of those that... You know, it gets deleted. It's just not really that interesting. You know, it's cool because it, you know, it flips, you know, Flipboard.
It does flip, yes.
And I think that's sometimes the glimmer of an app. And when it does something that's very, very visually interesting, that doesn't last. That will, you know, because at the end of the day, the app has to really just be good. And right. Not to say that it's not, but it becomes kind of, all right, are we really going to do this again? Are we going to, you know, I've seen this animation. Okay, page flipping. Great, great. You know, and it becomes a little cumbersome. The thing that made it so interesting actually becomes its detriment.
Yeah, because every time you launch the app, you get that quote-unquote cover image that they pull from one of your feeds, and then you have to flip to actually get to your content, which is, yes, sort of annoying.
Right. So, yeah, it's like, no, I opened this up because I want my content. I'm not looking for that experience anymore.
Right, right.
And that's kind of sad, and I think it's probably one of those weird human nature things where when something... It was repeated too many times, it can seem like a rut.
Especially when it's something that after the first initial, then when you start to use the app on a regular basis, you realize that it's actually something that's an impediment to getting where you want to go.
You know, this brings up a really good topic, which is iOS 7. Now, I don't have it. You have it. A few of my friends have it. And so when I look at it, I always see it with kind of fresher eyes than the people who have it, obviously. And so there are features that in my mind seem super cool. Like, for example, and this is probably the biggest one with me, is the idea of a folder that has more than 12 things in it. It seems to me like that's awesome. Like you can be scrolling through inside of a folder. So consequently, you could actually have one page of apps on your phone and just go inside the folder and scrub through them. So I could have all my photography apps at my disposal.
Yep. The downside, I would say, is sure, you know, you're getting more apps in a folder. The thing I like about the current folder implementation is when you open a folder, you see everything in that folder. The new iOS 7 implementation, you have to open that folder and wait, what I want on page 3 or 4 or what of this folder?
You know? So it really ends up becoming just a step in from what we're already at. So I've still got to scroll through pages just like I am now, except I dive a level deeper to get there.
Right. You dive on iOS 7. I'm pulling my iPad over here so I can look at it as I talk. But yeah, iOS 7, you tap a folder and it opens and it shows you 9 icons.
Only 9.
Only 9 at a time. And then you scroll from there to see whatever else you have in your folders.
See, and this is where I would love it to have a little bit of autonomy and a little bit of a learning curve where I can, if it automatically set up the apps I use the most in an order that it made sense. Like, you know what? You use this app quite a bit. Let's put it to position number 1, right on the home screen. I think I would like that, but I'm not totally sure about that, and this is what scares me. Like my dad came, he's 85 this year or 86.
Mm-hmm.
And he has an iPad. He loves it. I mean, absolutely loves it because he feels like he can do stuff with it. And I've heard this on other shows, and I am scared when 7 comes down the pipeline because I think it's going to be a big shock to him. And as much as it'll be a shock to me to get it, but at the same, I mean, I know that I can, you know, get through it.
We're tech savvy users.
Exactly. And, you know, he still has a little bit of trouble copying an image that I might send to him in messages.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So like there's that little, you know, and I'm a little fearful that it's going to be, of course, it sounds like for the pad, it's going to be delayed. iOS 7 is on delay. At least that's what the trades are saying. But, you know, the truth will be told here probably in September.
Yep. Well, no beta yet this week. So who knows, you know.
Still.
Yep.
Interesting.
But to, you know, back to your point, I have to agree with you. I have an elderly parent as well who loves her iPad and uses it constantly. And when iOS 7 comes and changes the way everything looks, it's going to be an interesting little learning curve.
I mean, because it seems as though a lot of the buttons are diminished. You know, yep. And everybody's talked about the home screen. It's a slide, but there's no real and see, that's the part that I think is the quality and the humanizing of having something to move, and that the skeuomorphic word that's been, you know, crucified and almost turned into a negative is actually, that is the reason why I think the iPad adoption was so huge, is because it felt comfortable, and it felt comfortable to people who weren't necessarily comfortable in sitting in front of their computer. Yep. I know what to do. I can slide something over.
Right. Yep. And now you're expected, it still says slide to unlock, but you're supposed to slide the whole screen. And it's an interesting shift, you know?
And of course, and then I got to talk about it because it's important. All these icons, I mean, I really liked at first glance. I really thought Windows Metro looked cool. Like out of the gate, that looked super interesting. I can see now I've never really used it, but I can see where now it's an impediment, because now you've these big blocks of shape on a design standard. That's excellent. It looks very interesting. It's composed. We like it because it's these color fields that kind of interlock, and that's visually interesting. On a usability scale, I'm not so sure about it, but
right.
These apps are all getting these reskinned, and I don't like to use the word flattened because I think that there's a better word for it that hasn't been come out yet exactly, but these kind of oversimplified graphics that it starts to make everything look, well, like Metro, and it makes it all look the same. And I think that's a step backward, where, you know, the functionality part and the interesting, the tap bot type idea seems to go away and it becomes bland.
Yep. Well, I think that's partially, I mean, you know, this is speculation. I haven't talked to Johnny Ive recently. But, you know, I think part of that has to do with this idea of making the OS feel more like the base and everything else, all the apps that you run, you know, sort of come on top of that.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I'll put this into the notes, some of the images I was kind of pulling down just off the phone. And, you know, you had these really nice kind of, you know, I guess they were called, kind of the candy coated, you know, roundness of, and to create that illusion of depth. And now, and like a lot of the icons, even cheaper, you know, kind of knockoff type apps all seem to have that three-dimensional, on the top face to make it almost kind of come out at you.
Right.
And some of them even accentuated the rounded wreck, you know, and put their, you know, put their icon or imagery like sitting right, you know, kind of coming off of it, you know, and it looked, I mean, you know, it was what we thought of as an app. And now you take that and you flatten it down like Yahoo. I'm going to go back to Yahoo. I'm going to beat them up a little bit more. Their fantasy football app. Completely. Now it's three colors. That's it. Done. I understand it from a design point of view, but I think it starts to make everything look just big color fields.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And in fact, I guess I could probably go on record to say that most of these apps that are changing over to the iOS 7 movement are using a max of four colors.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is, you know, it's like, so what's the point of having Retina? You know, it's just, you know, it's one of those things I look at and it's like, you know, wow, you know, you couldn't throw a gradient in there?
Give it a little something. Yeah.
You know, we live in a textured world. We don't live in this smooth world. Everything has some sort of texture to it.
Definitely.
And I think when you start to go down that path of smooth beyond smooth and, you know, what basically looks like, you know, paper cutouts on paper. Well, I mean, I guess I'll say, you know, flat is not exactly the best.
Right. And Apple's, you know, I think trying to mitigate some of that with the idea of taking that three dimensionality and putting it into the, you know, deeper into the OS, this idea of folders that you now sort of zoom into as sort of, you know, you're diving into the interface and then coming back out when you close a folder. And that sort of thing, and the parallax effect with the background and the icons, how they shift, the background shifts independently from the icons and that sort of thing. They're trying to take that three dimensionality and you know, make it layers of the OS instead of on the top.
You know, that it's interesting that you say that, because now I think, you know, that's an interesting almost, you know, it's a very artful thing to do. It's almost like a, it feels like a, like a, like a movement where you try to make things look as flat as possible. And yet when you go into it, there's a lot of depth. It's the grand illusion, you know, it, like almost like cubism, you know, cubism was made to take three dimensions and push all those things together at one time. So you could see, you know, from every angle at one particular moment.
Right.
You know, it, we could, you know, maybe this is going to be something trending forward where maybe our desktop, on our computers is, you know, will have that kind of feel where it, you're instead of moving left to right, you're diving deeper. That would be, that could be interesting. You know, they already did it with Time Machine in a sense of, you know, creating that, that element of going back and forth rather than side to side. I don't know if it's a good thing, right. But.
Well, in terms of Time Machine, I think it's a paradigm that makes sense. You know, you're actually, when you launch Time Machine to go restore a file or what have you, you are literally diving through time.
I love it.
Yeah, it's a great thing, but you know, and that idea of diving in and pulling back out makes sense in the context of Time Machine. I don't know that it particularly makes sense in terms of the Finder.
Yeah, well, I remember I had an app that actually would turn your desktop into three dimensions. I wish I remember what it was, but it made it like a box where you could put these your folders in stacks or hang them up on the walls. It was crazy, but there was something interesting about it where instead of having one flat surface, I now had, you know, two walls, a back wall, and a floor where I could put things. Now, I mean, you could create a real big mess that way, but it was interesting. Interesting thought.
don't give me a floor to leave things on, because yeah, you'll end up with a big clutter real
quick.
That's
right. Right. But again, you know, it's like, is there a benefit? Is there a true benefit to that? You know, in the case of Time Machine, I think that there is, because it actually becomes visual information. We understand what that means.
Right. Well, I think if there was a true benefit to this idea of a desktop with walls and a floor, et cetera, we would see it.
Yeah.
People would be using it. It would be
the apps
important.
Like that. Yeah, apps like that would have taken off like gangbusters.
Right.
And they haven't, so obviously we don't understand, we don't see it like that.
Right. Right. Well, and you know, to pull it back to iOS for a second, you know, we talk about how they, you know, the flattening of the of sort of the top layer of iOS. And, you know, I have my issues with it, et cetera, but I think it can work out okay. One of my main concerns is that everyone is going to rush to make their app look just like iOS 7. And I think that that's the wrong tactic to take. I think that from my view, iOS should be viewed as this, you know, the operating system, obviously, and this base layer with Springboard, where you access Control Center and all of your icons and the settings app and all that stuff. But when you actually go and launch a third-party app, to me, that's where you take over this device and make it something completely new and different. You know, as we've talked about before,
yeah.
You know, that's one of the things people love about the iPads and the iPhone is you have this thing and you hit an icon and launch an app and this phone becomes something completely different, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it ceases to, a phone is a tertiary, it may, you know, a part of the whole thing. That was the amazing thing. Yeah. That was the amazing thing. It was like, this thing can be an audio recorder if I want it to be. This thing can be a note taking, it can be an editor, and it you know, takes up that screen and becomes that thing. That's
right.
Yeah.
And the problem is, to me, is if everyone rushes and makes all their audio editing app or whatever look just like iOS 7, To me, that takes away part of the experience of you know, tapping that icon, loading that app, and it changing your device, it turning your device into something else, and that doesn't need to look like Springboard and iOS.
That's a great example. It's like you know, if you make it your own, don't just fall right into the trappings and to make it look and seem like, oh, well, it should be on this phone because it looks like other things that I have on the phone.
Right.
I guess you can do that if you want to do, like, if you want to be kind of swarthy and tricky about it. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, envelop the user in what you wanted them to be a part of, not the status quo.
Right. And you know, admittedly, I come at this from probably a slightly different perspective than most people, because both of the apps that I have, Hue Less and Hue More, there is basically no standard interface in those apps. We have a couple of dialogue boxes that pop up that use a standard dialogue, but our interface is 100% custom. So, from my perspective, taking over the iPhone and making it your own, is a way to make an interesting app. I mean, I'm sure there are the majority of apps out there use standard built-in UI kit in order to build their interfaces. So
now, I haven't even opened up Xcode in forever, it seems.
But, okay.
And so now I'm wondering, like, is the UI builder in that basically showing, you know, it's kind of like, you know, they had all the buttons, the default buttons, the back button, you know, the cookie cutter pieces. Are they all sevened up, so to speak?
I to be completely honest with you, I have absolutely no idea. I myself spend very, very little time in Xcode.
Yeah.
I spend my time in Photoshop and Illustrator.
There you go. Well,
you know,
as you should.
As I should, yes.
Because what did I say about code today? I said it makes me, mentally allergic to it.
I'm with you there. I know enough to get myself into trouble, and I know enough to discuss issues with my development partner, who is the brain. But I couldn't code Hue Less or Hue More on my own. Certainly not.
It just seems, that seems like such a mountain. When you just said that, I'm thinking to myself, I don't even know where I would begin. But that's not my trade. It's not my trade. And sometimes I have to remind myself, you know what? You can't. You can do a few things really, really well, but you can't do all of them because you start putting your fingers in too many pies, and you can't eat them all.
You end up with sticky fingers.
That's right. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I mean, and that's one of the reasons that Michael and I work so well together is we have totally complementary skill sets, very little overlap. So it's easy for us to work together, you know.
I think we just figured out, at least in my mind, the title of this podcast, which is You End Up With Sticky Fingers.
What's this podcast about again?
Everything and nothing.
Okay, just checking.
And all things in between.
That works for me.
You end up with sticky fingers. I love it.
So, love it. Slight subject change, but have you seen this Jobs movie?
All right, look. There are... Ashton Kutcher is kind of the third wheel of a trinity of people that I don't trust. The first one's Ben Affleck. The second one is Jeff Bagwell. He used to play with the White Sox.
Okay.
And the main reason is when you look at them, these guys have nothing going on the back channel. And I used to say in college and that what these guys would sleep with your girlfriend. They would steal her with no problem. Kutcher has made himself, he's kind of put himself in that category for me. His voice, he didn't do any kind of vocal training just to make himself sound a little different. And so I can't get over that. He just mm-hmm. does, you know, and I know that there's that one like shot at the end where he's pulling out the iPhone. That one really scares me because I really wonder how well the makeup was done. And it seems like, you know, they just covered kind of the Isaacson story. It doesn't seem like, you know, we really don't know much about Steve on the inside. And so any movie we see is just going to be kind of, I think it's going to be a repetition of the story that most of us, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So is it going to be worth it to me? I don't think it is.
Yeah, it's certainly not something I'll pay to see.
No. Yeah, that's not going to happen. I would much rather pay to go see Pacific Rim. I'm cutting it down to brass tacks. If you gave me $15 or how much ever cost to go see a movie, which is a whole nother thing, but if I could only walk into one or the other, it'd be Pacific Rim.
I think I'd have to agree with you there. Yeah.
And that's not even knowing much about Pacific Rim.
Action, special effects.
That's right.
Unknown okay. actors.
Whoa. You need to start watching Sons of Anarchy, my friend. Yes, you do. Stop. I got my wife straight up addicted to it. And the Nerdist podcast with Charlie Hunman is incredible. It is phenomenal, and you'll have a whole new respect for it. I'm telling you. I'm telling you.
All right. Well, you know, anything's possible.
Well, I'm telling you what, this one's possible. Sons of Anarchy is. Whew.
The only series that I've watched or been watching in the last few years on any regular basis is, you know, I guess I should be sort of embarrassed to say it, but is Game of Thrones.
Well, I'll tell you what, my buddy gave me his HBO Go pass. I binged that in, what was it, almost a week. And I was, because everybody kept talking about, I was like, come on, it can't even be that good. Well, I wish I had HBO.
It's good. It's good.
I'm boggled by it. Well, of course, then Breaking Bad's going, that show is, that's another one. It just,
never seen it.
Oh, see? Do yourself a favor.
To me, I just have a basic problem, and it's a personal problem, but the basic problem is I just can't see myself spending time week after week watching a show about a meth dealer guy. It just doesn't appeal to me.
I know. That's exactly what I thought, but there's deeper layers than that because the hero of the story is doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, and it seems to be a character trait that a lot of TV shows are pulling out, which is this, it's not a good person, but they're being pushed on us as if they are a hero. They're honestly not good people.
Right.
But there's something about it that you seem to find a redeeming quality about them, but really there isn't. It's a bizarre thing. I think this is cultural, and we could go on and on about it for sure. But you can already hear my voice is getting ready to go. I'm getting deeper and sexier now.
Well, now it's time to start the show, right?
Oh, did you hit record?
No. What, record? What? What's that?
I got to hit record too. Oh, got it. Well, I guess show number two just went down the drain.
Oh, you're lying, right?
Of course.
Thank goodness.
All right. That would suck if I didn't.
It'd be kind of funny. Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to see if this show's any good. I don't know.
Wow. I'm telling you, some of the feedback I got off of the first one, I think we're on the right track.
Not too bad, huh?
No. I think we're telling everybody the right things.
Good.
And that's, I think, good. That I think the banner is there's not a lot of overdone. We're not too conceited.
Oh, I'm working up to it.
Right. We will. I mean, well, and then once we start doing the web hosting ad spots, then everything will change. Yeah, when we get when we get paid and get the FU money.
The FU money.
All right.
Follow up money.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna join the Marco school. You know.
Yeah, I don't know what that school is. It's just like, I'm gonna come up with something and then I'll sell it.
And yeah, I guess I gotta come up with something that somebody wanna buy, huh?
Well, now speaking of which,
yeah,
I think you got two things there, and if I'm not mistaken, we could throw the special deal out.
Special deal?
Well, I mean, I know from dealing with you and just a few other developers that every time you hit that release button, maybe you get some of those codes that everybody starts to go crazy for.
Promo codes. Yes, that's what they're called. Promo codes.
We got to figure out a way. What could we do?
Well, I've got codes, that's for sure. I don't know. We could stick a few each of the Hugh Less and Hugh More codes on the episode page up on the website and let people come fight for them.
That's right. We could do that. And maybe if they, you know, said something on ADN or, I don't know, tweeted about it and maybe hashtagged Hueless or Hugh Moore, or maybe they hashtagged preservation state. I don't know. Maybe something would drop in their lap.
Yeah, I think that maybe a Twitter or an app.net post with maybe both hashtags. Maybe
there we go.
A preservation state hashtag and either a Hugh Less or Hugh More hashtag might get them something.
Well, I think that sounds good. Now,
we'll see if
anybody does it.
See if anybody cares.
That's right.
Anybody listening out there?
You can get free apps. Everybody loves free apps, and especially apps that are free that you normally would have to pay for.
I mean, three bucks a piece.
Yeah. And you get a 25 meg image.
If you're using the TIFF, yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Well, I say we could probably have five codes of each to give away.
Sure.
You know,
might as well. We got to entice them in, start them small. I mean, that's the key to the hook anyway. You got to get them, cook them young.
Cook them young.
Yeah. Well, RJR them.
I see. Are you implying we need some sort of mascot similar to Joe Camel?
Well, we do have a mascot. The Infinity Cube. The great seal of preservation.
I see. I like the idea of sort of viewing it as a mascot. It sort of personifies it.
That's right. It's like the monolith, which again, we could go, I'm going to fall down a rat hole right now if we start getting too deep on this, but I'm going to just say it like this. The monolith is genius to the fact that it gives shape to the shapeless.
Whoa.
That's right. I said it.
Shape to the shapeless.
There we go.
I need to sit down and watch 2001 Space Odyssey again.
You need to do it right now.
It's time. It's been a while.
Okay. Christopher, where can people find you so we can just make sure we get that part out?
I think first and foremost, people should head over to preservationstate.com.
Correct.
And there they can see show notes for this show and the previous show too. And learn a little bit about us. And yes. Then if they'd like to converse with me, have something to say, they could reach me either on Twitter or app.net. At CRSTFR would be the way.
Easy enough.
Yeah. And how about you, Philip? How would they find you?
Well, actually, I have news on that because, you know, obviously somebody that I know was gracious enough to hook me up with blackoctopus.net.
Sweet.
And so that's my my filtration state, if you will, to Atmos at both ADN and Twitter. So if you start there, well, you start at preservation state first, correct? That's where you start. But you can go, you can branch off from there. I mean, there's actually multi levels of connections that you can get to us.
It's so true. If you go to preservation state,
that's really where to go, though, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's the center point. That's the cube. That's where the cube begins. And then we hit it.